Doc was sure that he was dead. He couldn't see anything, couldn't hear anything, couldn't feel anything. Finally, the ordeal of his fragmented, torturous existence was finally over.
Get up, Doc.
He opened his eyes and found his cheek pressed to the ground. It was very dark. He tried to sit up and couldn't manage it in the narrow space. He pulled himself up to his feet, using the cables mounted along the walls as handholds.
What happened?
Explosion. Must have gone off right over the tunnel. If you can move, let's go.
I can move.
They soon discovered that the Stickies who'd been in front of them hadn't been so lucky. The concussion of the explosion had torn them apart. The tunnel dripped with their fluids, and the floor was clogged with their limp bodies. The friends had to walk on the corpses to get by them.
I didn't count them, but I think all of the Stickies ahead of us bought the farm.
They stumbled along as fast as they could until they could see the light at the end of the conduit. Then they proceeded with caution. The passage opened onto a low-ceilinged room crammed with electrical boards, fuse panels, pipes, air ducts, and long-dead machinery. The cables in the conduit fanned out over a broad wall lit by torches. Along the floor were stacked sealed cans of paint, solvent, and cleaners, reminders of a time when everything still ran and had to be maintained.
I think we're in a hotel. Let's find out where.
JB took a torch from the wall and opened the door at the end of the long room, revealing a concrete corridor, much like the one they had seen when they were taken to the cooler. As they headed down the hall, they quickly confirmed their location. They saw the plastic lilies wired to the doors of Baron Elijah's crypts.
That means the elevator is that way.
There was no sign of Sekhmen. Apparently, they were all upstairs, fighting for their lives. JB rounded the last corner with the Armalite's butt against his shoulder. He swept the sights across the fronts of the elevators. The good news was there were no targets, Norm or Sticky. The bad news was that both sides of the shaft were empty. The elevator that still worked wasn't on this floor. Then he saw the door to the power plant standing ajar. He waved for Mildred and Doc to follow him, but cautiously. When JB barged into the power room, the slaves jerked their heads up from the wheel's spokes.
It's okay. Everybody relax.
Doc and Mildred took up positions just inside the doorway.
Unlock us so we can fight!
It's the Sekhmen, the one who turned us in. Hardly recognized him under all that grease.
We aren't doing anybody any good chained down here.
The other slaves nodded their agreement, but there was something in their eyes that JB didn't like. He wasn't sure which side they'd fight on if they were freed.
Does the elevator still work?
Sure. They had to stop running it because there are too many people trying to pack into it.
What are you thinking, John?
I'm thinking I might have a way to get us out of here alive.
In the hotel stairwell, Murchison rammed the steel-shot butt of his Uzi into the face of the resisting Cody. Clutching his shattered nose, the man abruptly sat on the staircase. Blood squirted out between his fingers.
Out of the way! Clear a path!
When the head Sekhmen and the Baron had laid out the plans for the defense of Willyville, they hadn't thought an attack would happen in daylight, with most of the known population outside the hotel's tower. The plan, should the berm walls fail, should the mines fail to stop in advance, was to make the Sticky pursue the Baron Sekhmen up the twisting stairwells, where they could unleash withering, concentrated firepower. The key to the strategy was an orderly and rapid retreat. They needed to be able to withdraw in order to keep the mutants at a safe and proper blasting distance. In the real world of unforeseen events, that wasn't possible. The line of retreat was blocked by the bodies of the Toadies and their kin packing the stairs. The Sekhmen at the bottom of the stairwell couldn't back up without falling over their own. Cordite smoke from the autofire barrage coiled up the well. When he turned and looked down, Murchison could see the Stickies curling themselves under the barrels of his men's weapons. The suicidal bastards absorbed dozens of high-power rounds, so the monsters who followed could climb over them and onto the momentarily trapped Sekhmen.
Let's hold things up! Move, you worthless sacks of shit!
Using the butt of his Uzi, Murchison battered his way through the crowd. When he reached the next landing, he found it blocked by a mass of people. They began pounding on the locked steel fire door.
No! You've got to go higher! Keep moving up the stairs!
He pushed back the blockage and looked around the corner of the landing. People packed the stairs all the way up as far as he could see.
Got damn it! Rear guard, get up here!
A squad of the rearmost Sekhmen raced up the stairs. The toadies and their families crushed to the sides of the well to get out of their way.
I want a path opened up all the way to the top! Get going!
The Sekhmen used fists and feet to drive a wedge between the Normans. The stubborn ones were knocked over the railing. Murchison stepped into the wake his troops made and flared at the toadies.
Up! Follow us up!
Above the 17th floor, the stairwell was clear. When the head Sekhmen reached the open fire door to the 24th floor, he immediately started herding the Norms behind him inside.
All right, let's go! Get in! And move to the end, dammit, to the end!
The cream of Willyville funneled, dazed and shaking, down the hallway lined with looted couches and chairs. Ryan swung himself over the rail of the fourth floor balcony. Hobbled by ankle shackles, he made an ungainly landing on a patio table.
Damn it!
He tied off the end of the rope on the rail and hobbled to the door. Finding the slider lock, he picked up a metal chair. The dark hotel room was empty, of every bit of furnishing not nailed or screwed down. He checked the bath, which was empty. When he stepped out into the dim hall, he came face to face with the crowned muzzle of a hogleg stainless steel blaster, a Ruger Red Hawk 44 Magnum with a 7.5-inch barrel. The toady Norm on the other end of the Red Hawk was shaking up a storm. He could hardly miss at this range, though.
I'll kill you!
Ryan swept the Ruger's long barrel aside and clamped his hand over the gun's cylinder.
Hey!
The toady tried to discharge the weapon into Ryan's leg, but with the cylinder trapped, the hammer wouldn't rise on double action. Ryan hit the man once in the stomach. The blow doubled the man over and dropped him to his knees. He let go of the pistol. The one-eyed warrior turned the hand cannon around and cocked it.
Please! Don't shoot me!
Ryan put the pistol's muzzle against the first link of the ankle chain. His ankles were no longer connected. He swung out the cylinder and saw that he had 3 live rounds left.
You shouldn't be down here. Nobody should be this close to the ground. The Stickies can climb up the outside of the building. Is anybody else on this floor?
Uh-huh.
Well, get them the hell out, and quick, before the stairwell is cut off.
When the toady just stood there, Ryan realized he was going to have to do it himself.
I said, go!
He shoved the man ahead of him as he stormed down the hall.
Everybody out! Stickies are coming! You can't stay here! You're not safe!
Behind him, the doors opened a crack, and the hiding Norms started filing out. Ryan's only goal was to recover their weapons. The last time he'd seen them, they were 21 floors up. He headed for the stairwell door.
Ugh, fire blast.
It was already too late. The Sekhmen had retreated to a higher floor. There was nothing but Stickies in the stairwell. Ryan didn't say anything to the Norms. He couldn't help them. He abruptly turned and pushed past them, moving back the way he had come.
What are we supposed to do?
Die!
When the one-eyed warrior re-entered the balcony room where he had tied off the rope, Stickies were already scrambling over the rail onto the patio. 3 of them rushed at him through the broken slider. The single 240-grain slug smashed through the first mutant's head, then the second, and finally the third. They toppled like dominoes. He walked over their hulks and out onto the balcony. Another Sticky popped up over the railing. Tying the Ruger into his waistband, Ryan untied the rope, jumped up on the railing, and launched himself into space. As he swung out, he could see Stickies climbing from patio to patio on the outside of the hotel. In seconds, they would be swarming over the fourth floor. Ryan pulled himself up the rope. It was much easier going with his ankles free, but still a long, dangerous climb to the penthouse. As he inched past the floors, he could see figures running about and the muzzle flash from weapons. The rope under Ryan twitched, tensed, and stretched. He looked past his boots and saw that he was no longer the rope's only passenger. Many stories down, a Sticky had grabbed the end of it and was shinnying up after him, light and quick, like a spider on a web. Even as Ryan watched, 5 more of the mutants caught the end of the rope and started up.
Fire blast!
He knew there was no way he could shake them off the line, so he didn't even try. Instead, he redoubled his efforts to climb the rope, moving toward the penthouse as fast as he could. When he reached the top floor balcony, he caught hold of the rail and pulled himself over. The first thing he saw were the bodies of Elijah's kin. They were sprawled amid shards of glass. The patio floor was a bloody lake. Out of the corner of his eye, Ryan caught a glimpse of shadows moving inside the penthouse. He couldn't do anything about them. There wasn't time to secure his back. The first Sticky on the rope was already level with the 22nd floor. Ryan grabbed one of the 50-pound sandbags and laid it on its side on the rail. The tag ends of the rope that cinched the bag closed were 6 inches long. Ryan quickly wrapped the cinch ends of the bag around the rope that he had just climbed and knotted them tight. Then, he pushed the bag off the balcony. It slid down the main line. He saw the Sticky's dead eyes go wide and its flabby mouth gape as it looked up and realized what was about to happen. And that there was no escape. It smashed into the head of the first Sticky, knocking it loose. The mutant spiraled in space, then dropped in a headlong dive. Still looped to the rope, the bag kept on going, and once again picked up speed. The Sticky below swung around the rope to avoid getting bashed on the head. The bag missed its skull, but the impact of the sliding loop broke the sucker grip of its hands. The bag continued to slide down the rope, and like beads on a string, the climbing Sticky slipped away, falling off the end of the rope and crashing to the parking lot.
Nice work, One-Eye.
Ryan spun to see Baron Willie Elijah, his face nicked and bleeding from broken glass. Blobs of spattered blood clung to his coarse white chest hairs. The Baron held one of the G-12s aimed at Ryan's heart. The fire selector set on 3-round bursts. Ryan thought about going for the Red Hawk's grip, but knew even if he reached it, he'd never get 7.5 inches of barrel out of the front of his pants before Elijah drilled him. He slowly raised his hands. The gunfire and explosions from inside the compound gave the muti slaves in the Baron's fields their first clue that Willieville was under assault. They stopped whatever they were doing, straightened from the rows of crops, leaned on the handles of their shovels, and turned toward the sounds of the pitched battle. The overseer stared in disbelief at the plumes of smoke and debris spiraling up from the center of the ville. He shouldn't have just stood there flat-footed, with his back to his prisoners. The raghead slave gripped the end of his shovel's handle and swung the side of the blade at his oppressor's head. Clutching at the back of his head with one hand, the overseer unlimbered his whip with the other. Before he could strike, the other slaves savaged him with their shovels. The slaves in the surrounding field saw what the picture was doing and seized the opportunity to attack their overseers as well. Using garden tools, sticks, hands, and feet, they overpowered them and beat them to the ground. In a matter of minutes, there were no more living slave masters outside the walls of Willieville. When the muties in the pit saw a group of stickies coming toward them from the shantytown, they waved their gory shovels in the air. Then they rushed across the river valley to meet their liberators. As the two bands of mutants came together at the edge of the cultivated area, other slaves in distant fields moved to join them, hobbling with their young strapped on their backs. Raghead stepped forward to greet the leader of the Stickies.
Thank you, brother. We come to join Ka in the war against the Norms.
No sooner were the words out of Raghead's mouth than the mutant realized something was wrong. Very wrong. Backing up as the Sticky advanced, Raghead bumped into fellow shovelers. The Sticky captain sniffed the air around him, then its dead eyes caught the glint of red on the edges of their shovels. Its tongue traced over the points of needle teeth. It started to shake, and strands of clear goo began to weep from its fingertips. The pit crew had nowhere to go. They were surrounded and outnumbered. Rogero, captain of the Stickies, paladin and peer of Ka, leaned down and grabbed hold of the chain that connected Raghead's ankle. He jerked it so the muti crashed to its back on the ground. The Stickies swarmed in a flash. As they tore off the headgear, exposing the hideous tumor-ravaged face, other Stickies took and jumped the remaining slaves. The other slaves coming in from the fields stopped where they were. They stared at the mad scrambling in the dirt, the clouds of rising dust. Then they turned and ran for their lives. In the flickering torchlight of the bank vault, Christy watched the huge mutant called Ka thrash and quiver on the floor. His jaws snapped together. His Norm eyelids, which were shut, fluttered and twitched. And he wasn't the only one having a fit. The quartet of Stickies in the vault was shaking uncontrollably. They, too, appeared to be unconscious. The suddenness and violence of the attacks had made Christy, Jack, and the other muties stop what they were doing, which was stuffing the Baron's Apocalypticon into plastic trash bags. Of the 20 fully conscious muties in the vault, only Christy dared to go near the piebald man. She leaned in for a closer look at the blind white eye in his forehead. Under the milky surface, she could see a tracery of fine capillaries. The lids that protected it were flabby, puckery things. Bloody tears welled up in the sagging cup of the lower lid, then overflowed, spilling down his brows and cheeks. Lord Ka was caught up in a terrible internal struggle. For what and with whom, Christie had no way of knowing. The powerful muscles of his neck and shoulders were corded, his lips curled back from tightly clenched teeth. The battle had begun the moment he had unpeeled his middle eye. It was a conflict. He didn't seem to be winning. Christie was confused by her own emotions as she watched him suffer the torments of an invisible hell. There was a terrible beauty to him. Not just his size and massive musculature, not just his skin, not just the third eye that decorated his forehead. She sensed something inside him, something vulnerable, something pure. She couldn't even describe whatever it was to herself. She only knew what it made her feel to be near him. Awe. The creature who called himself Ka was unique. The folktales of Deathlands, which Christie had learned by heart at her mother's knee, encompassed a wide range of mutated species, real and imaginary, with attributes and powers equally diverse. But such a being as this had never even been hinted at. Though there had been no Jack, no gain in it for him, Ka had freed her from the captivity of the norms. He had freed all the slaves of Willyville. It was unheard of. And somehow, he had managed to unite the Stickies and other Muti races into a cohesive fighting force, which was impossible.
What do you think's wrong with him, Jack? Do you think he's dying?
Lion say he chilling in his sleep.
Christie hadn't heard the lion talk, but she knew that didn't mean he couldn't. She wondered if only Jack could hear him.
He's chilling Norms out in the ville?
No, can't do nothing to Norms but Hayat. Chills Dan with his M60. Does things to Stickies with his brain, though. Look at those guys over there, shaking them apart.
That's what it looked like to Christie, too. The four Stickies' bodies were jerking and snapping, and white foam was pouring out of their mouths. When she glanced back at Ka, she was relieved to see that he had stopped his thrashing. He sat up, and bracing his back against the brushed steel of the safety deposit boxes, pinched his third eye shut. The battle was clearly done, but at a cost. Ka let his chin sink onto his chest for a few seconds. When he raised his head, she saw there was anguish, perhaps even a touch of despair in his face.
Have you ever chilled someone you loved?
No, I haven't.
I did. Just now, with my mind, I chilled a trusted friend who betrayed me because he couldn't overcome his nature. Because I was too weak to protect him from it. The pre-docs had a word for such weakness. They called it hubris. I didn't realize until now, because I was blinded by pride, that there were limits to my gifts. It never occurred to me that my control might be finite, that 6,000 Stickies were too many to contain when there was blood mist in the air.
I don't understand.
My paladin, Rogero, committed the ultimate crime against the moral order of the new people. He willfully, and for his own pleasure, caused the death of a fellow mutant. He did this while connected to every other sticky mind in my legion. Once he started the chilling of the field slaves, I couldn't make him stop. I couldn't stop the Stickies with him either. Soon their bloodlust would have infected the whole army. I had no choice but to terminate the life of one I loved. A son, brother, friend. Also in full view of the others. I didn't do it to make a point as an object lesson to my troops. Stickies don't learn through pain, their own or that of others. Pain is their sacrament, Angelica. I know all this is strange to you. I know, and I apologize. You and I have much to talk about. There is much that I do not understand myself. Much that puzzles me. I know you will be able to help me sort it out.
Ka rose and went over to examine the four Stickies. They might have been sleeping, except for the thin trickle of blood that leaked from the noseless nostrils. the twin holes in the centers of their faces.
They were too close to me when I showed the death card to Rogero. I didn't intend to kill them, only him. Brave ones lost for nothing.
When Ka turned back, he caught Christie staring at the M60. She hadn't formed the thought of trying to grab it and use it on him until the instant their eyes met. Then it was there, as big as life. Grab the blaster and use it. And she knew that he knew what was in her mind. It was the kind of shameful idea, the opposite of the heart, the spirit, that pops up without warning sometimes, perhaps to chasten people for presuming to think they know precisely who and what they are, and what they are capable of. Ka picked up the weapon and leaned it against the wall beside her, along with yards of belted ammo, thereby demonstrating that he trusted her, even though he knew what was on her mind.
I call it Joyouge. It means joy in a pre-doc language. It was the name a pre-doc baron gave to his weapon. That baron used Joyouge to beat back a plague of darkness and evil and rebuild his land. Continue the packing, everyone!
Ka observed them as they took the stacks of documents from the floor and from the open safety deposit boxes and piled them in plastic trash bags.
Don't fill the bag too full. We have to be able to carry them, and I don't want them to break. Double-bag them until the supply of bags runs low.
Ka then moved closer to Christie.
This pre-doc baron, this hero I mentioned, he established law, order, and peace in his land during his lifetime. But after his death, the countryside and the people he had freed descended back into the pit. The power that he alone possessed had held together the wild and disobedient paladins, the competing interests of corrupt administrators and traders. I learned much from my study of this man's story. I learned enough to see my life reflected in his tale. I know that when I die, if my power dies with me, whatever I have built will fall apart. That even if we rid Deathlands of the gnomes who have enslaved and butchered us, the new people will have no future. That is why you are so important.
I don't understand.
You will, Angelica. You will.
The Stickies ripped and clawed at the few remaining Sekhmen who stood between them and the 24th floor landing. Murchison thrust his Uzi over the shoulder of the man in front of him and fired full auto into the seething mass of needies, stitching a line of 9mm lead across their heads. All the way up the stairs, he and his men had battled the army of Stickies. The more they killed, the more they faced. A seemingly endless supply of needle teeth and suckered hands. Murchison didn't know how many men he'd lost. At least half of his force, maybe more. The Baron's security force had reached the end of the line. The stairs didn't access the penthouse. The 23rd floor was as far up as they went.
Inside! Get inside the door!
When the last man stepped back over the threshold, the Sekhmen behind him tried to slam the fire door closed. A cluster of sticky hands and arms blocked the door from shutting. Murchison shoved the muzzle of his Uzi through the crack. He fired until the mag came up empty. Before he could get the weapon back in, a sticky grabbed the barrel.
No, you don't!
For a second, they played tug-of-war with the carbine, a game Murchison realized he couldn't win. He let go of the weapon, and the Sekhmen crashed the steel door closed. Murchison avoided looking into the expectant, terrified faces of the Norms huddled on the couches and chairs of the hallway. They wanted to hear some words of encouragement from him. He had nothing good to tell them. The defensive plan for Willyville was a bust. There was no way they could have foreseen having to face an army of that size. And now they had retreated as far as they could go. They had ammo stockpiled on this floor. They were committed to making their stand here. Murchison did a quick count of his men. There were fewer than he'd hoped had survived. Not 50, but 20. It wasn't enough to put a gun on each of the possible entry sites for the Stickies. There were so many ways they could get in. through the balconies, windows, air ducts, elevator shaft. For all he knew, they could chew through the rat-blasted walls. The headsec man walked over to the double pair of open doors of the elevator shaft. He stuck his head in and looked up toward the penthouse.
Sir, we could use some more shooters down here. Could you send down the sec team you've got up there? Sir!
Hold out the beauty bastards! I'm counting on you!
Oh, son of a bitch.
He pulled his head back and glanced at his men.
Okay, you three, give me a hand.
They broke into the long wooden crate stacked along the wall opposite the elevators. The boxes were full of stamped steel cheapo blasters. He rearmed himself with a KG-99, a giant step down from the Uzi he'd just lost. He started going up and down the rows of chairs and couches, passing out loaded handguns and machine pistols to the male toadies. He had no choice. He put them in position to defend the women and children from various possible angles of attack.
Don't use them blasters unless the stickies break onto the floor! Which is gonna be any goddamn minute.
Murch is right. You're gonna need every shooter you can get. How about giving me back my blaster?
Elijah looked over at the pile of confiscated weapons. He seemed to vacillate. Then his expression hardened.
Just sit there and shut up. I need to think.
Ryan used the moment to survey the others trapped in the penthouse. A handful of very important toadies cowered on the couch, and nervous sec men were pacing with their guns at the ready. Rooney, too, sat in a corner with her babe on her lap, hugging her. The eyes of the Baron's granddaughter-wife were huge with fear. Across the portal of the shattered slider lay the bodies of her sisters and their children. Ryan found it hard to feel sorry for any of them, except the girl child. The others had brought all this on themselves, especially the Baron. A few thousand stickies had reduced the Baron's sphere of influence, which had only hours before extorted tribute from hundreds of miles of Deathlands to two floors of a hotel. When the stickies were through with it, there'd be nothing left of Elijah's enterprise but ashes and bone chips. He wondered if it was all over for his friends. If so, he knew that Christy, JB, Doc, Jack, and Mildred probably suffered terribly before they died. Ryan considered whether he should try to kill the Baron to pay him back for causing the deaths of his companions. Across the room, the Red Hawk lay beside JB's hat. If he were going to make a dive for a gun, that would be the one. It was shorter than the G-12s, so it would be quicker to sight. He weighed the pros and cons, but in the end, he decided not to go for it. The Stickies would make a much better job of killing the Baron than he ever could. Despite Elijah's warning to keep quiet, Ryan decided he couldn't miss this final chance to rub it in.
Seems like we're all sort of up a tree.
Sec-man guarding the balcony glared at him, as if a few hard looks would make him stop talking.
We've crawled out to the last branch, and out to the very tip.
Shut him up!
Ryan shot Skeen a contemptuous glance.
You better calm down and get your mind around what's coming. Otherwise, you won't be ready to face it.
We still have a chance!
Yeah, that's right. But only if we can learn to fly real quick.
Is he right, Papa Daddy? Are we all gonna die?
Elijah tried to speak, but he couldn't seem to get any words out. He gently stroked her hair.
Don't let them get us, Papa Daddy. At least Puny 2 and Toony 2 and their babies died real quick. Don't let the Stickies tear me and Rooney 3 apart, Papa Daddy. Promise me that before that happens, you'll chill us yourself.
For the first time ever, Ryan saw defeat in the Baron's eyes. Crushing defeat and a terrible sadness. It wasn't a pretty sight. Elijah was coming to terms with the facts, and the facts were that everything ended here. All that he had worked for his whole life, all his dreams. Tears welled up in his eyes.
I promise you, Gal, I won't let him have you.
They're on the balcony below, there's a fucking million of them!
Kill them! Kill the bastards!
It's coming apart, Elijah.
Get your blaster, one eye! Go get your goddamn blaster!
As Ryan crossed the floor, a bullet suddenly caught up through it. A spray of lead that chewed chunks out of the rug and gnawed at the ceiling. Ryan dove for the corner, with slugs clipping at his heels.
I believe I can carry one more.
Doc wiggled his left index finger. The old man was laden down with round and rectangular cans. He held them not only hooked over his arms, wrists, hands, and fingers, but wedged under his arms as well. JB glanced over the row of metal containers that remained along the sub-basement wall, checking the labels. He selected one that was nearly full and looped the handle over the old man's extended finger. Mildred was likewise bent under the combined weight of numerous one-gallon cans.
Can we go now? This stuff isn't getting any lighter.
Go on, and stack it by the elevator like we did that last batch.
JB gathered up his own burden. He followed Duck and Mildred back to the elevator. They set the selection of solvents and thinners in front of the elevator opening, alongside the others. JB began placing the cans inside as Doc handed him each one. He was very particular about their order of placement. Certain chemicals had to go against the back wall of the car, and others right up at the front. As he set down the containers, he unscrewed and discarded the lids.
Oh, merciful Lord! These vapors are making me lightheaded.
Take it easy, Doc. The fumes from this stuff can be dangerous. Why don't you step out and let me finish the job?
When he was done, JB took two of the open cans and poured their contents over the rest. The floor of the car was puddled with accelerant.
How are you going to ignite it?
That's all figured out, don't worry. Okay, back to the power plant. Let's get this show on the road.
Agreed.
Blaster fire seems farther away, doesn't it?
It does, most definitely.
The Stickies are charging up the tower, driving the Baron Sekhmen ahead of them. It looks like old Elijah's going to make his last stand on the penthouse floor, which means all those chill-crazed Stickies will end up jammed butt to elbow on the floor underneath, beating on the walls and ceiling, trying to get in and get at him.
JB led his friends back through the power plant door. The slaves didn't look glad to see him.
Okay, let's get that car going.
Sullenly, the chained muties rose to the task, bracing their arms against the steel turnstile. No one pushed, though.
How long does it take for you to pull the car up to the top floors?
Depends on how much weight is in it.
I'd say no more than a couple of 100 pounds.
Maybe in 4, maybe 5 minutes.
What are you gonna take up there? 'Cause maybe we don't want to move it if it's gonna chill Stickies. Ever think of that? Maybe we want them to win. They're gonna set us free.
Oh, it's gonna chill Stickies, all right. If they're all packed in at the top of the hotel about now, trying to slaughter the last of the Norms, the Baron, and his Sekhmen, I figure to nail most all of them in one swoop.
Maybe we'll let the Sekhmen there do all the pushing. See how long that takes.
Anybody else want to make a fuss? Anybody else think I'm not serious here?
Flurries of unaimed slugs continued to tear up through the rug, pocking the walls and ceiling.
Quiet's no good.
Watch the red blasted windows.
Ryan snatched up a G12. He sprinted out the penthouse door and down the hallway to the open elevator shaft. As he had expected, the Stickies were coming that way. Like pale cockroaches, they crawled up the inside of the empty shaft. Some scampered up the swaying cables, while others used their suckered fingers to gain impossible handholds on the concrete walls. Switching the G12 to single shot, Ryan sighted down the shaft. To Ryan's surprise, the cables on the left side of the shaft suddenly began to move. One set slid down, and another rose up.
Someone's operating the elevator.
As the cables moved, they brought more Stickies into Ryan's kill zone. 4 of the mutants clung to the cables, riding them up from 24. Ryan flicked the fire selector switch to full auto. Ryan whirled. Behind him, the duct vent in the ceiling had suddenly dropped to the floor, and a Sticky was already falling through the opening. Ryan raked the hallway ceiling with auto fire. Ryan ran under the duct vent, and he fired the G12 straight up without looking. A dead Sticky dropped to the floor. Ryan turned and knelt at the corner of the hallway. Dead and wounded Stickies were falling out of the ceiling, pushed out by the live ones coming up the duct from behind. They crashed to the floor or onto the tightly packed furniture along the walls. Some struggled to get up, despite grievous injuries, throwing off the bodies of others who would never move again. A check of his round counter told Ryan he still had 30 bullets in the magazine. He switched the fire selector to tri-burst to conserve ammo. He knew it was hopeless, of course. Even if he had a case of reloading units for the G12, even if he could keep refilling the mag as it came up empty, even if the action didn't get so hot that the entire 50 rounds cooked off every time he slapped a fresh unit home, even if he made every shot count, he was going to lose.
Fuck this!
Ryan went right past Angry into the ice-cold realm of Killing Machine. As he hunkered there, his mental focus was as sharp and as deadly as a razor. Though he wasn't back in the mayhem of his jump dream, he touched on his memory of it to find a place inside himself where there was no fear, no regret, no second thoughts, where there was only the ravening will to destroy, just like the enemies he now faced. Though he had them in his sights, and it was an easy 150-foot shot, he let the stickies drop from the ceiling without firing a round. They poured through the vent, landing one after another, and as soon as their feet hit the floor, they started running straight at him. He didn't let them have it until the first sticky was 10 feet away. With all the bodies clogging the hallway, all those entrapping, tripping arms and legs, the stickies were forced to move more slowly, and they packed themselves more tightly together as they advanced down the corridor toward him. Ryan had what seemed like a long time to stare into the face of the first sticky in the line, who had just barely escaped death, and who had to know that it wouldn't be so lucky the next time. There wasn't any fear on its face, only eagerness. Ryan reflected it back to him like a mirror. The pile of dead doubled in height, creating a much greater obstacle for the sticky still dropping from the ceiling. Ryan abandoned his position and ducked around the corner. When he entered the room adjoining the balcony, he saw stickies swarming over the patio rail. Others already had the four segment down on the glass-littered floor, and a mad, thrashing battle was in progress. Elijah opened fire, tri-bursting his own men in order to kill the incoming stickies. By the time he was done, there was no one alive on the balcony. Elijah tossed aside the empty auto rifle and picked up another from the pile of gear he had confiscated from Ryan.
They're coming!
Skeen pointed first toward the hallway, then in the opposite direction, toward an interior door that led to the Baron's bedroom suite. They were coming from every which way by now, through the windows, up the elevator too. The corner that he and the Norm survivors had been backed into had just gotten much, much smaller. It was down to one room and the balcony.
They're getting ready to rush us. Get away from the doorways.
The toadies started to move back from the doors, but not quickly enough. Stickies darted out from the hallway, snatched four of the Norms, and dragged them around the corner, out of sight. Neither Elijah nor Ryan could get off a shot. They stepped out on the corpse-littered patio. Looney, too, with her baby in her arms, slipped between Ryan and Elijah for protection. Skeen blundered back into the room, stumbling over the threshold. Stickies charged from the bedroom door of the penthouse, making a suicide rush for the five survivors. Elijah turned them back with a full auto burst, but only just. Looney, too, put a hand on her grandfather husband's shoulder and squeezed it hard.
It's time! Kill me and the baby, Papa Daddy! Me and three! Do it now!
When Elijah didn't move, didn't speak, she reached out and lifted the G12 he held, putting the hot muzzle against her own temple.
Now! Please do it now!
Try to think on the bright side. One way or another, this is the last time you're ever going to have to do this!
Mildred was horrified and repulsed by the scene. Though she knew it was necessary, there was no other way. It was hard for her to watch the agonized effort of the Muti slaves, to see their rad-blasted faces twisted in pain, the muscles of their naked bodies corded, shaking with the strain as they turned the wheel, wrapping the cable around the drum. The more cable that filled the drum, the wider it became, and the more difficult it was to turn. The slaves were pushing as hard as they could, but merely inching the wheel around. Doc held the clutch lever, feathering it as the gears ticked, and somewhere invisible above them, the car rose in the shaft. In the ceiling over the old man's head, the heart of the clutch, a huge steel dog, clattered against gear teeth. The floor indicator dial said 20, but it was swinging up to 21. When the indicator hit 22, JB picked up the AK and checked the 30-round mag. There were plenty of rounds left.
I'd better get to it. Once a car gets to 23, Doc, lock up the gears and stay clear of the machinery just in case.
The armorer returned to the elevator shaft. When he stuck his head inside and looked up, he couldn't see the bottom of the car, but he could see the cables moving around the pulleys. He hopped into the empty shaft and lay down on his back. Dropping the fire selector switch to full auto, he shouldered the weapon. As he waited for the signal, JB had a moment of doubt. His plan wasn't quite the sure thing he had made it out to be to Doc and Mildred. Theoretically, a steel-jacketed slug passing through the floor of the car and striking the stainless steel wall would cause a spark. Theoretically, he had about 20 chances to set off the firebomb.
23!
JB sighted up at the center of the shaft.
Blow, you fucker!
Now, Papa Daddy! Do it now!
I can't do it, gal! I can't shoot you! You're all I have left in the world!
Bastard! You're not thinking about us! You're thinking just about yourself! Listen to what you're saying! You're still trying to keep what you got! Me and the babe! We aren't things! We hurt! Do you want us to suffer? Don't we mean anything to you? You've got to have mercy, Papa Daddy! You've got to give us up! You coward! Think of us, you miserable coward!
I won't do it, gal. I don't have it in me to harm you or that child.
You think we're some kind of pets, Papa Daddy? It doesn't matter if you lock us away, or starve us, or leave us for the stickies. Well, I'll show you. I'll show you what we are.
Rooney 2 darted into the penthouse and picked up the Red Hawk from the floor. Elijah was right behind her. She spun and poked the muzzle at the middle of Elijah's sternum. The big gun jumped out of her hand, flying over her shoulder. Elijah's body leapt back, flames licking up through his massive white chest hair. He crashed into the wall, then fell forward onto his face. Before Ryan could stop her, Rooney 2 dashed out onto the patio with her baby still in her arms. She scrambled onto a tabletop and from there to the railing. From the railing, she jumped off into space. Skeen ran back out of the penthouse and cowered behind Ryan's legs.
What are we going to do now?
Ryan darted back into the penthouse, snatched a blanket from the couch, and into the middle of it threw an armful of the gear Elijah had confiscated. He grabbed stuff at random, and when he had as much as he figured he could safely carry, he tied all four corners together in a double knot.
What now?
Now we...
Ryan struggled up from the carpet. Tongues of orange light were flicking up through the bullet holes in the floor around him, and the foam backing of the carpet was already starting to smoke and flare. He recognized the handiwork.
Well, JB, I guess you're not dead after all.
Oh no! They're coming again!
The stickies on their floor had recovered from the blast. As they rounded the corner, Ryan dashed out onto the patio. He slipped the knotted blanket over his head and under one arm, carrying the load in a sling over his back, which left both hands free for fighting and for climbing.
Don't leave me here!
In the penthouse, Skeen knelt in a spreading puddle of his own piss, while dozens of stickies closed in and sheets of flame swept up the walls. Ryan took hold of the rope and hopped over the railing. A half second after the firebomb blew, the power plant room rocked. The lifting cable snapped hard against the windings on the drum. The powerful jolt shook the whole apparatus. The spokes moved, driving the slaves back a step, even though they had their bodies braced. Grease sprayed down on them from the meshed gears in the ceiling. Doc leaned on the clutch lever, making sure the dog stayed in place. Mildred was looking at the quivering floor indicator when JB raced back into the room.
It worked! Dark night, it was one sweet fireball.
I'm curious, John Barrymore. At what temperature does your petroleum distillate cocktail burn?
Oh, it's hot. Rad blasted hot. Maybe 6,000 degrees, maybe more.
The slaves stood and dared to relax, leaning against the spokes.
You guys did good work. We just fried a whole shitload of stickies.
The only one who looked happy about it was Lester.
What's that?
Suddenly, the severed elevator cable came exploding back through the hole in the ceiling. The tension on the winding drum sprang loose, and the gears overhead ground together. Doc tried to hold the clutch lever back, only to have it jerk from his hands with such force that it snapped off at the base. The steel bar shot across the room and hit a slave square in the face. JB dived to Mildred, pinning her against the wall with a shoulder. Without a clutch, there was nothing to stop the great wheel from turning. And turn it did, going from 0 to 100 revolutions per minute in the blink of an eye. Chained to the whirling spokes, the helpless slaves were lashed and battered against floor and ceiling. And then, the elevator car dropped from the top of the hotel, and the whirling gears broke loose. They dropped like giant buzzsaws into the spokes of the wheel, and the room was instantly full of shards of metal and chunked slaves.
Come on!
JD, Doc, and Mildred ran through the doorway. Flames from the crushed elevator car billowed out into the hall. Their hands shielded their faces from the intense heat as they ran back to a staircase leading up.
At least you didn't lie to those unfortunates, John Barrymore.
How's that?
You promised the poor bastards they'd never have to turn the wheel again.
Brian locked his ankles around the rope and slid down from the penthouse. 30 or so stickies were on the balcony above him having a dance party. Without music. Or maybe there was music, but only they could hear it. They weren't paying him any mind. Wildly gyrating, waving their arms, they were watching the fire race through the floor they were on. They didn't seem to realize that the rope on which Ryan hung was their only hope of escape. Or if they did, they didn't try to jump for it. He could see more of them inside the smoke-filled rooms, hundreds, perhaps thousands, dancing as they burned up. It was as if they were unable to break the spell of the flames. As Ryan slid down a floor, he glanced upward and saw that the heat surge between floors had been so hot that it had started his rope on fire.
Ah, shit!
He loosened the grip of his ankles around the line and let himself slide faster. The friction ripped the hell out of his palms as he tried to control his fall. He dropped past balcony after balcony, but he didn't see any more stickies or any more signs of life inside, period. The mutants had swept up through the hotel, slaughtering everyone they found. Below him, about 10 stories, a couple of straggler stickies hung onto the rope. They weren't climbing, they were just hanging there, blocking his path, tripling the amount of weight on the flaming rope.
Time to play sandbag.
Ryan loosened the grip of his hands a bit more. He rocketed down the rope, digging the sides of his boot heels into it to take some of the pressure off his tortured hands. When he was within 15 feet of the stickies, he swung his boots out to shoulder width. The soles of his boots crashed into the top sticky's head. Its suffered grip failed, and the first sticky plus Ryan, about 350 pounds of total weight, fell on top of the sticky hanging onto the rope below. Ryan clamped his hands tightly around the rope and dug in the sides of his boot heels. He kept on sliding. Seeing him coming, the stickies below abandoned the rope. He squeezed tighter, feeling the skin of his palms and the insides of his fingers rip off. He dropped down 7 stories before he got himself slowed and under control. All the stickies beneath him had tumbled to the parking lot below. Ryan lowered himself to the end of the rope, then dropped the 10 feet to the ground. 2 of the fallen stickies weren't dead. Jaws snapping, heads bloodied, limbs broken. They tried to crawl over to get him.
Fire blast.
Ryan reached behind his back for the walnut grip of the Red Hawk.
Wait, Ryan! Wait, Ryan! Allow me!
JB, Doc, and Mildred were running toward him from the hotel lobby. The armorer held an armalite.
Look out!
Mildred pushed Ryan back as a hotel length of rope dropped from the sky and landed in loose coils on top of the dead stickies. The last 30 feet of it were still burning. They looked up at the top of the hotel, which was now engulfed in flames. Black, greasy smoke was floating east on the hot afternoon wind.
Nice job, JB.
It was inspired. The work of a pyrotechnic genius, if not a pyromaniac.
Ryan extricated himself from the makeshift sling, set it on the ground, and untied it. The first thing he took out was JB's fedora, which he handed to his old friend.
Thought you might want that back.
Dark night. I never thought I'd see it again.
JB donned the hat and adjusted the rake of the brim. Ryan looked with concern at Mildred. She was staring up at the burning hotel, as if mesmerized. He put his hand on her shoulder.
Mildred, are you okay?
Yes, I'm okay. I was having another flashback from the jump.
She closed her eyes. When she opened them, she noticed Ryan's injuries for the first time.
Ryan, your hands! They need immediate attention. They look like ground chuck.
There's no time for that.
Ryan passed out the rest of the weapons, then tucked Christie, Smith & Wesson pistol in his back trouser pocket.
We've got to find Christie and Jack. They could still be alive.
Let's go check out the zoo.
Watch your step. These stickies might look dead, but they can fool you. Blast anything that moves.
The four companions retraced the route the Sticky Army had taken to the hotel. They walked along the edge of the golf course, past its still-smoking blast craters. The path was littered with broken bodies. Some of them weren't Stickies. Some were muties, wearing ankle chains. Mildred knelt and looked at the lethal wounds with the trained eye of a doctor.
Some of these slaves were chilled by Stickies. I think Ka had some trouble making his dream of a noble brotherhood of mutants into a reality.
Like the Tower of Babel.
Do you think Ka was in the top of the hotel when it went up?
I didn't see him, but then I wasn't looking real hard either. If he was up there, he's chilled. Unless he grew wings.
When they passed the bank where Elijah kept his Apocalypticon, they found the front doors open and paper litter blowing through the foyer. Doc picked up a single torn sheet of paper that wrapped itself around his shin.
Reserve component 071-315-2304. 0 ANPVS-2 to an M16A1 rifle. I think our mutant commander has made off with the Baron's prized collection of pre-doc documents.
And maybe he never went up in the hotel. Maybe he's still alive.
Could be.
It was odd seeing Willieville so devoid of life. So quiet. A half hour before, the place had been thriving. One of the few jewels of Deathland's human civilization. Now, it was just another stinking boneyard. They came upon the trampled length of intestine as they walked up the path to the zoo entrance. The doors to the building were open, as were all the cells they could see from the doorway. Open and empty. The place was as still as a tomb. Ryan's faint, desperate hope of finding and rescuing his red-haired lover began to evaporate. They walked around the ravaged corpse of the zookeeper, then split up to quickly check both of the long corridors. On Ryan and Doc's side of the zoo, all the cage doors were open and no one was home. JB and Mildred returned alone from the other side of the zoo.
Ryan, they're not here.
Over her shoulder, in the distance, Christie could see the pall of black smoke rising from the top of the Freedom City Motor Hotel and Casino. Even though the wind was blowing the smoke at right angles to the highway, the nasty, charred plastic and over-roasted meat smell of it surrounded her. Ryan was still back there at the Ville, along with Mildred, JB, and Doc, probably dead. Their burned flesh was probably part of the stink she smelled. Christie felt too numbed to grieve for them. So many had died. So quickly. Soot particles and bits of ash peppered her face, arms, and hair. She shifted the awkward load she carried to her opposite shoulder. The underside of the bulky black plastic bag full of documents was sweaty where it had rubbed against her. Jack walked by her side. He too carried a plastic bag stuffed with papers and books. All the muties who accompanied Lord Ka on his retreat from Willieville, 20 in all, were loaded down with the liberated treasure of the Apocalypticon. Even the mutie mountain lion had a bulging bag tied across its back. They moved away from the burning Ville, following their piebald leader. Though Lord Ka had won the battle for Willieville, that victory had cost him everything. Virtually his entire army had been caught in the top of the tower when the fires broke out. Though he had fallen into an even more violent, foaming, thrashing fit, there was nothing he could do with his third eye to save his troops from destruction, because they didn't want to be saved. The power blood and flame had over them was greater than the power of his love, his vision, his integrity. He couldn't convince his stickies to run. He couldn't even make them descend one floor to escape their horrible fate. Their instinctive drives negated every mental image he sent them. The long view, the big picture he provided, no longer mattered. When there was that much gore and smoke in the air. Ka had taken the loss hard. It had drained him both physically and mentally. Christie could see it in the way he held his head, his shoulders, in his gait. He really cared for his troops. He felt he had let them down terribly, that he hadn't done his job, hadn't protected them from themselves. Seeing him like that, in such internal pain and torment, made her want to cry. But she couldn't muster tears for him. Whatever Ka's plans had been, whatever campaign he had in mind after the victory at Willyville, they'd gone up in flames along with the top of the hotel. He no longer had an army. He had a platoon made up of former zoo inmates, most of whom were the products of the half-baked genetic experiments of Baron Willie Elijah. They were headed south down the highway from the direction of the way stop and the redoubt. No one asked any questions of their leader. They just followed the piebald giant, a flock of sheep trailing behind a broken-hearted shepherd. When they came to the first collapsed overpass, Lord Ka led them around the obstacle. Ahead, on the dirt path, they could see the pit trap. Its limbs and branches caved in. Ka stopped at the edge. He removed the shoulder strap from his M60 and lowered it down into the pit. One by one, the mutant general lifted out a dozen naked stickies. As he did, he passed his hand over their bald heads. Their feet and ankles and their legs up to the shins were covered with dirt-encrusted gore. When Christie peeked over the edge of the pit, she saw the muddy bottom and red, raw shards of bone sticking up from the trampled muck. Ka's touch seemed to calm the stickies, who pressed around his knees with lowered heads. Because of the psychic bond, they knew exactly what had happened to their kin. They knew that they were the only survivors of the once great and glorious army. After a minute of his laying on of hands, they drew back and stood. They stared at the group of zoo muties with their dead, unblinking eyes. One of the stickies broke off from the pack and circled around to approach Jack and Christie from behind. When they turned toward the sticky, it moved quickly away and hunkered down, sniffing the air in the direction of the muty lion's backside. The sticky was curious about the huge beast, but cautious. However, when the lion didn't appear to object to being examined in this way, the sticky grew bolder and got right in its face, breathing in the rotten meat fumes directly from its mouth. Suddenly, the lion swatted the sticky on the side of the head with its forepaw. The pale mutant cartwheeled across the path, landing finally on its face. It rose up, shaking its head and blinking rapidly, bruised but alive. The muty cat grinned and licked the pad of its foot. It had struck with sheathed claws. If it had used them, the sticky would have been dead in a heap in the dirt instead of scrambling back to its agitated kin.
My people, let us rest here. Set down your burdens.
The group of muties stepped back away from the mad trap and set their bags down. As they rested, Ka went through the bags, dividing up the Apocalypticon so its weight could be shared among all the muties. A few loose papers blew out and fluttered across the highway. He made no attempt to recover them. When he was satisfied, Ka picked up his bag and walked away, the rest of his people following suit. With their loads lightened, the ragtag force moved off at a faster clip to the south. From the increase in the pace he set, it appeared that Ka had a particular destination in mind, even if he wasn't sharing it with them. It didn't occur to Jack or Christie that nothing was stopping them from escaping. They could have slipped to the back of the file, dropped their loads, and hidden in the weeds until the others moved off. They were fascinated by Ka, by what he had tried to do, by the hope he still offered, and by the dignity and grace with which he bore his great tragedy, the loss of his army. Ryan deftly picked his way up the rubble pile on the backside of the fallen overpass. He jumped from block to block until he reached the coils of hurricane wire that blocked its summit. He gripped the wire and stared down the long straight stretch of six-lane highway. He turned to look over his shoulder at his friends.
Something's moving down the road.
JB joined him at the wire. Tipping down the brim of his fedora to block the sun's glare off the roadway, he squinted at the tiny moving dots in the distance.
Could be them. I just thought I saw a flash of white, maybe Jack's head in the sun.
Ryan, my dear fellow, look what Mildred's found.
When Ryan looked down at the woman, she waved a couple of sheets of crumpled paper at him.
More stuff from the Apocalypticon. It's got to be Ka up ahead.
Looks like they're going back the way they came. Maybe all the way back to the redoubt.
JB stared at the dots on the horizon again. They were much smaller than they were only a moment ago.
They're really moving. We're not going to be able to catch them unless they slow down or take a rest stop.
If Christie and Jack are still alive, they're probably up there with Ka.
One thing, Ryan, maybe you hadn't thought about.
What's that?
Maybe they don't want to be rescued.